WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Common. And I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, I'm really thrilled, delighted, and very happy to have a brand new personal friend, Margaret Barakiva. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sue.
I say a personal friend because I had the distinct pleasure of meeting Margaret. Was it 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Margaret started or was responsible in a lot of ways of helping to organize a conference for homeowners in New Jersey, and we're going to be talking about that. So she invited me, and I went up, and I'm still on a high from my trip up there, Margaret. I have to tell you that, and it was great meeting you and Professor Askin and his wife, Marilyn, and, you know, all of the people that I have been talking to and hearing about, and there they were in real life person, and it was great. It was wonderful.
It was great meeting you, Sue. I'm so glad that you decided to come down to the conference, and I think the high comes from a room filled with people of goodwill and decency who want to do what is right for homeowners.
I agree with you, but the thing is that you've kind of taken control of the agenda, and that I think is really very good.
Yeah, I think it was important to do that after five decades of having a trade industry pretend that they are speaking for homeowners.
I agree with you, and it was well attended. I don't know, were you expecting that many people to show up?
We knew that there was a great deal of interest, but the conference also was held on a weekday when a lot of people are working. So we didn't know what to expect, but we kept hearing from everywhere of people wanting to attend. And so we estimated that there would be a lot of people. And it proved true in the last week when the numbers of registrants just grew and grew.
And okay, so do you know if it was just the people who were registered who showed up, or was it, I mean, it seemed like there were a lot of people there.
There were a lot of people there. Many of them registered, and some of them did not. And there was a group of seniors, as you know, who came because they thought that we're going to be dealing with the two specific bills that are in up in the legislature now. I think that the seniors from those communities are not very clear on what the issues are, but that's something that needs to be left for another time.
Well, that was probably the one kind of negative I would have to say. And again, you're absolutely right. They don't seem to understand what it is. I think they've been terrified. And we talked about it when Representative Julia Rabina was on the week before before I came up to New Jersey. And the same thing happens in Florida when there's any thought of any kind of legislation that's going to provide the much desperately needed adult supervision. All of a sudden, they go to the seniors. The seniors are scared to death, and they have the time, and they're bussed in. I mean, they've done this in other states, so it's a tactic that's used quite often, and I think that needs to be brought out. It is a tactic of the industry. The only people who have anything to lose, if there is some kind of oversight. So I'm going to put that aside because that, you know, to me, that's not so important. What is important is that you had Rutgers University Camden, you had Rutgers University Newark, you had Seton Hall University all participating, you had the AARP, the ACLU, and, of course, the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition.
And I believe the League of Women Voters, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong, and I need to check that. and I can tell you from the program.
How?
Yes, the League of Women Voters also.
So you had eight organizations.
And Appleseed.
And Appleseed.
Public Interest Foundation.
So you had nine organizations that came together and saw a need for this.
Well, we've seen a need for this for a very long time. In fact, when we originally founded the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition, which was in 1997, our brochure, the membership brochure, in fact, held a panel on it that said, you know, we would like to hold a conference in the following year, and could you sign up for it and tell us what you want to talk about? So two of our founding members, who were Drs. Lois and Sam Pratt, whose foundation also sponsored this conference, always wanted to have this type of conference. And so 10 years later, we finally had it, because we had some incredible organizations who were willing to organize it and saw the need for it.
How influential is the Twin River case in having put this together? Surely that would be a major sort of indicator that there's a desperate need for something like this.
Well, we are all eagerly anticipating the ruling by the Supreme Court on the Twin Rivers case. But the Twin Rivers case will deal with particular issues about Twin Rivers, like the placement of election signs and use of the community room for political purposes, and access to the community newsletter. But it has this very important component to it, which the appellate division ruled on, which was to recognize homeowner associations as constitutional actors. And that aspect of it has very far-reaching implications.
Yeah, you're expecting the ruling to come out, but I think it sort of underscores the problems in associations on a large scale, really. The Twin Rivers case.
Yeah, I think that it points to the fundamental problem that exists in homeowner associations at the moment, which is that people living in these types of associations, which I think has reached like 52 million in the United States, are in essence second-class citizens and don't have the same rights as their neighbors living outside of these associations. But the problems that come with not having these rights are very far-reaching, because on a small scale you can say, well, then you really don't have a means of changing anything within my association, because my rights are so abridged when it comes to posting election signs and using the community room in order to assemble for a political meeting. But the bigger issue, when I think that that's a very frightening thought for a lot of people who are intellectually involved in this whole process, is that the growing number of associations with their diminished democratic rule are growing in such proportion that they are going to cause a real issue with people's democratic rights and constitutional rights. We have these what Professor Askin calls these bubbles that are growing, and they're going to become one big bubble where people are living with compromised constitutional rights. And I think that's a very frightening thought for many of us.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, and it's scary to think that so many people are willing to give up their rights for some perceived, some perceived benefit, which really never seems to materialize. But You know, one of the things that Evan McKenzie has always said is that the debate has never taken place about associations. The debate on a national level has always been very one-sided. It's always been from the perspective of the industry, and these are the people who have something to gain by perpetuating this the association concept. You've kind of taken that and taken the debate, I guess, and taken a little bit away from the industry, made it a little more, it's going to take a lot more than the one conference, but you've sort of taken a giant step, I think, towards taking control of the agenda.
We hope so, Shu. We definitely have had an impact on the way that people think about associations and about the role of homeowners and about the role of the trade industry within those communities. And I, my feeling is that for too long we have allowed our homes to become, to be used to feed the egos of power-driven boards and to fill the pockets of a profit-driven industry. And I think it's time to reclaim our communities and to refute the specious arguments that are put out there that people move into these communities because they love the way the rules are set up, that they move into these communities because the amenities are so great that they are willing to compromise on their constitutional rights so that they have their manicured lawns. I mean, we need to start dispelling these nonsensical arguments and have people face the truth.
That's easier said than done, isn't it?
It is. And I have to tell you, you know, I don't blame people for being so forbearing. It's a time consuming task, and it is a matter of changing the paradigm, and it's a matter of having people who are strong enough to take this on, realizing full well that they might be targets of the board, that they might be given a difficult time by the attorneys and the property managers who run these places, and I understand why sometimes they bury their head in the sand, but I keep wanting to tell these people that there is a price to pay for not getting involved. There are long-range ramifications to this, and if you don't get involved and if you are scared, then you are going to pay the consequences later on.
You know, I think you hit on a word. It's one of my favorites in this whole thing, and that's scared, fear. I mean, the way bullies get away with what they get away with is by scaring the living daylights out of people.
Yeah.
So they're ruling by fear here.
Yeah, and if you see some of the letters that the attorneys write on behalf of the board, you can easily forgive people for being scared.
It's easy to understand, but one thing, Margaret, that I keep reminding or trying to remind people is that there are more homeowners out there than there are industry members, associations, board members, and you know all of the other things. And it's your homes, folks. You know, band together for crying out loud, and just don't let them get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you turn when you're politically naive, you turn to your legislators for help, and then you find out that there are only a handful who actually still remember why they ran for office and what their role is. For the citizens of a certain state.
You said a mouthful there, darling. You said a mouthful.
But the rest of them, simply go with whoever has the lobbyists on their side.
You've got the conference in New Jersey. I think last year, the California Homeowner Association and Marjorie Murray's organization, they also had a conference that they set up for the homeowners, by the homeowners, and it was something that was taken over. So we're beginning to see a little bit more of that. Pat Harif in Arizona last year set up a workshop for homeowners to empower homeowners and to get, you know, to give them information she got. I think she got some people in to talk to them and help them out. So we're beginning to see where individual homeowners, and these are individual homeowners who are taking the initiative to start challenging the industry. And yeah. I think this is really, really great. I mean, Florida's done a lot of stuff. Jan Bergman is terrific, but I think they have probably the model legislator over there, Representative Julio Ravina, who just doesn't take any nonsense, and he said he's going to make it his, you know, it's his passion. He's going to make sure that the residents, the homeowners in Florida, are well protected. So we're beginning to see a little bit, a little teeny tiny bit of a shift.
Yeah, but one legislator cannot do much.
No,
they can start the process, but they need to be people of a certain caliber in order to do what's right.
And I think that the homeowners, you know, they cannot, once they find a legislator who's willing to take up their cause, the homeowners have got to be behind that legislator.
Yeah.
Because quite often what happens is they get a legislator who says, all right, you're right, I'll take it up, I'll propose legislation. So they go, and it's heard in committee, it's heard before the full body of legislators, and you have the industry there speaking against this law, and the legislator who wrote it turns around and there's no one there behind him to support him. So the law loses. The homeowners get upset and say, see, it doesn't make any difference. You really can't trust these people. So there's blame on all sides.
Well, last year we had, as you know, there are two bills in New Jersey. One is a homeowner's bill of rights and the other one is a trade industry bill.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the trade industry bill made it through committee, and then within a month or two, made it through the New Jersey Assembly. And at the hearing, there were more people speaking against it than for it. The people who spoke for it were basically a couple of board presidents and CAI attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the people had turned up to oppose the bill. But it made it through the committee without any problems, and then made it through the assembly with all the Democrats here voting for it. And the Democrats in New Jersey are the ones in power. And it is really disheartening. And I have to tell you, Shu, that it was a very young legislative aide who really opened my eyes to the reality of what goes on here. Because when we heard that the committee, the assembly committee, was going to be hearing this bill, mm-hmm. for 3 days, and they gave us only 3 days' notice, we worked around the clock to notify people, to write letters, to appeal to the committee members, and we had this incredibly detailed analysis of what was wrong with the bill, because, as you know, the bill is intentionally written in such a way that it's convoluted and misleading and really deceives a reader into thinking that it's a good bill. And so I desperately, you know, called the assembly's, the committee's offices, And I said, look, you've got to make the chair of the assembly understand that this is a really very bad bill for homeowners, and it will just cement the powers of the boards and the developers. And he said to me, in a very gentle tone, I just want you to know that it is expected to make it out of committee. Meaning that it's already, you know, don't tear yourself to pieces because the decision has already been made. And I have to say that it was this young fellow who opened my eyes to the realities of what goes on in state legislatures.
Yeah, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. It's kind of like a homeowners association meeting, right?
Exactly right. And you have the political action committee of the CAI soliciting money from homeowners, and who then write out checks to the CA PAC without homeowners knowing about it, without an open vote or discussion. And then, to add insult to injury, the CAI then uses these monies to contribute it to legislators as political contributions.
Yeah.
Who then use and influence them to squash homeowners' rights.
No, I agree with you.
So basically, with our money is being used in order to squash a bill of rights for homeowners.
That's right. It is. I mean, it's just unbelievable the way this whole thing,
yeah.
the whole thing is set
yeah.
up. I mean, the homeowners are really on the losing end, but they still have the power. I still firmly believe that the power is with the people, and they can do something about it if they would just do something about
yes,
it.
Look, there's no doubt in my mind that things are going to change. The question is, how long is it going to take?
I don't know. That's a good question, Margaret. I don't know. Any thoughts? How far do you think we're going to go? Right now, I had a member of CAI in the studio, I'm going to say a month, 6 weeks ago, and she told me that... she said that she would dare to say that 100% of everything that's being built nationwide right now is part of a homeowners association. Although the official number is 4 out of 5 or something like that, but she thinks that everything is part of a homeowners association. And this was Pietra Gianni. She's an attorney and a member of CAI, and she's very, very active. She's on the board.
That's all the more reason to work feverishly in order to make these healthy places, if that's true.
I think it's true. Do you think they can be healthy places?
Look, it is true that they are fundamentally flawed. I mean, this whole concept is flawed. It allows people who don't have the training, who don't have a proper understanding, who sometimes cannot balance their own checkbooks, and it has them in charge of multi-million dollar investments. So there is a problem. But my feeling is that at least if we had clean elections, at least that would be a step in the right direction so that people can at least vote for the right people and not worry about ballots that are opened, that are not secretive in the fact that people can tell who you voted for, that the count is clean. That's the first step that has to occur. And then the second step that has to occur is a untainted ADR process where people are properly trained in alternative dispute resolution so that we remove this incentive to litigate at every level and make it possible for people living in associations to have their issues addressed and resolved out of a court of law.
In the case of Twin Rivers, would you rather have that not be part of the court record? I mean, you're dealing with constitutional issues. You want, Joe Blow from down the street to make these decisions?
You know, Shu, it's an interesting question because, you know, when we started off, I mean, you know, Twin Rivers didn't go immediately to court. It went through a whole process, you know. It started off when I ran for the board, I had election signs up. And nobody said anything. There were large election signs, a few here, a few there, a few on the main roads. And because, as you know, it's a huge place. You know, 10,000 people live here. And nobody said anything. And I got elected to the board. And I decided that things were not being run the way they ought to. And so it was a time of contention. And the next time that opposition candidates run, the Twin Rivers Board decided to implement a long-forgotten rule about election signs. And it reissued this resolution that said that you can only put a small sign in either a window or in your flower bed, where nobody can really see it. So you see that these resolutions come up by the board as a means of stifling political participation.
That's right.
I'm sorry?
I said that's right. I agree with you.
So initially, you know, we this was not meant to go to court. We said, look, we have a problem here. We want to hold a meeting in the community room that we all pay for. They initially decided that they were going to, they initially said no. Then they came up with a security deposit that was an exorbitant amount of money. And we wanted to put election signs. They took out this resolution that said no. So this case was even, it had even gone to mediation where we tried to mediate this whole thing. And when we couldn't, it eventually went to court.
But, okay, had you resolved it? Okay, if the court opinion comes down that, you know, you do not check your constitutional rights at the entrance of the association, then that's the law and that's going to protect everyone in New Jersey.
Yeah. And I mean, it has this incredibly wonderful unintended consequence.
That's right. But had you gone to ADR and someone said, well, you know, board, you know, you're acting a little bit strange here, we disagree with you, then your opposition would have been allowed to put the signs up. But then the next time or the next association, I mean, there wouldn't have been that all-inclusive, wait a minute, we've dealt with this, it's over with. Every time the issue came up, people would have to be reinventing the wheel, and
yes,
then you'd
true.
Have...
That's true, but not everyone has an organization like the ACLU backing them up.
I absolutely agree with you.
So if we as homeowners had decided that we didn't like this issue, we wouldn't have had the funds to go and fight this in court.
Oh, I agree with you.
So the reason that you need an ADR is because that's the only way that you balance the power structure. Because a lot of homeowners simply don't have the money to go to court.
That is a huge, huge problem. I think we need to address that, and I'm not sure that... And I'm not sure what the answer is, I'll be honest with you. I just look at the big picture and I think, you know, you're going to be putting... I mean, anybody could just decide to become an arbitrator. You don't have to have any knowledge of the law. You don't have to have any background on anything. You can just sit there and decide that you're going to be impartial, but that's not really the way it works. I mean, again, it's one of these things that in theory may sound a lot better than it actually works in practice.
It's true. The place where the ADR is housed is extremely important if we want to make it efficient and fair and worthwhile for homeowners. But as you know, we recently, Governor Corzine in New Jersey recently reinstituted the office of the Department of Public Advocate. So we're hoping that if it's housed in the Department of the Public Advocate, that it would be, there would be properly trained people to administer the ADR procedure, and hopefully it will not be tainted by the industry.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Margaret Barakiva, but we'll be right back, so please don't go away. There's plenty more coming.
We're WEBR, Fairfax's cable access radio station.
They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and today we're talking to Margaret Barakiva. Margaret is one of those people who decided that she was going to take the bull by the horns and, along with a few other people, managed to put together an extremely well-presented conference for the homeowners. And we're going to talk about, we kind of got a little off track in the first half, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to get back to the conference, Margaret, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The conference was kind of set up in four different chunks, if you will. You had the first one. Why don't you tell us about it, how you got around to doing it, and then also talk a little bit about the panelists, because you had really the top people in the field attending this conference.
I'm sorry, Shu, I didn't catch your last sentence.
I said you had the top people in the field attending the conference, McKenzie, Askin, Franzese.
Yes, it was incredible. The amazing thing over the last couple of years is that people like Professor Askin and Professor Franzese realized the urgency of coming together and trying to reverse the very bad trend in homeowner association. And so when we set up the conference, we set it up in four different segments. The first one, as you mentioned, Professor Evan McKenzie, Professor Askin, and Professor Francesi spoke. And then the second panel was where the homeowners told of their own stories. And we had so many homeowners who we started off thinking that we will only have 8 as a sampling. Then the requests came in, so it grew to 12, and then it grew to 14. And so at some point we had to just say, you know, that's it. We can't accept any more homeowners, because everyone who registered wanted to tell their story.
Yeah.
And so... And also, of course, we had to make sure that they didn't go on for a very long time because of the time constraints. So I think each one had about 5 minutes. And then the third panel was hopefully solutions panel, where we had the public advocate Ron Chen. We had Senator Martin and Senator Rice. And Senator Rice is the chair of the Housing Committee on the Senate side, and thus far he has been very good about not introducing the industry bill in the Senate Housing Committee. And we, as you mentioned before, we also had Daniel Carroll from Florida, the ombudsman from Florida. And we also had we were supposed to have Ed Hanneman, who is an attorney who works for the Department of Community Affairs. And he's what we call a one-man army, who takes the complaints as they come in from homeowners and tries to help them to the best way that he can. But we learned a couple of weeks before the conference that he was not allowed to speak at this conference, and the order came from his boss, who did not provide a reason, but simply said that he will not be participating in this conference, and they sent someone else instead.
Oh, the person who actually sat on the panel was not his boss?
No.
Okay.
There was another attorney from not the Bureau of Homeowner Protection, but from another, from it's the Division of Codes and Standards, which is part of the Department of Community Affairs. And then the fourth segment was the audience participation, where everyone in the audience, anyone, could come up to the microphone and speak their mind. So those were the four sections of the conference.
The fact that Ed Hanneman was not supposed to speak, I mean, I've never talked to Ed mm-hmm. Hanneman before that, before I came up to New Jersey, but he's a very articulate and passionate person. And I think a lot of the homeowners were very upset. I know that Professor Askin, when he gave his speech, started off by saying how disappointed he was that Ed Hanneman was not allowed to participate.
Yeah.
I think some of the homeowners who came up during the fourth period and were asking the other attorney who took his place on the panel, they wanted to know. You know, they talked a little bit about First Amendment rights and how he would feel if he was told that he couldn't speak on his day off. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't like it was work time. He had actually taken leave that day to
right.
be there.
Right.
And I got the impression from listening to the people that he's a very popular person, that everybody liked him, and that everybody was extremely disappointed that he was not allowed. I invited him to come on the show, and I would love to have him. But, oh, he was not allowed to speak, and he under threat of termination.
Yes.
That was something that I don't know if you... Yeah, he was threatened with his very job if he spoke.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit leery of even coming on the show because, you know, I said you can join us on the Commons, and you know, I'll let you talk.
Well, you know, Sue, what disturbed me more than anything about that episode is that there's no indication that at any time his bosses asked to see what he was going to read or what he was going to say, they outright denied him the right to participate. And that is a disturbing thing for me.
It's disturbing, I think, it's disturbing to me. I was a little disappointed. And I know that the homeowners were disappointed because...
Yes, you could see their reaction. They feel that he's the only person who has time to listen to their woes and to try and help them to the best of his ability.
He's, folks, from my limited experience with Ed Hanneman, he's passionate.
Yes, he is.
He's knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
He's outspoken. He's sincere. I mean, these were the things that I got just from talking to him briefly. I wish I had more time.
And like you, Sue, he cuts right through the nonsense and sees things as they are.
So if his bosses ever see the light and realize that he has a right to speak, there's always room for Ed on the show. So please please pass that on to him.
If I see him, I'll be happy to tell him.
I would love to have him on. I know that he would be able to give us a lot of information.
Yes.
The top people, Frank Askin, he's a professor at Rutgers.
Mm-hmm. He's a professor at Rutgers and director of the Constitutional Litigation Clinic.
Okay. And he's overseeing the Twin Rivers case.
That's correct.
And hopefully he'll be on next week. But, you know, I guess the jury's out on that yet.
Yes.
Evan McKenzie, I think, needs no introduction to my audience. He's been on so many times, and he is probably the guru in on the homeowner's side. But I mean, I say on the homeowner's side, but he's... He's not blind. I mean, he's not going to take every homeowner issue. I think he sort of sees it the way it really is. He takes more of a clinical look at the issues,
mm-hmm.
And is not afraid to voice his opinion, which is what I really like. And Paula Franzese, I was just very impressed with Paula.
I don't think I've met anyone like her.
She's bubbly, and I can't wait to have her on the show.
Yeah, she's extremely impressive, both in her ability to see the detrimental effect that homeowner associations, as they are currently run, have on homeowners. She's also chair of the Ethics Commission that Governor Corzine put in place. As far as her integrity is concerned, it is beyond reproach. And she also teaches law at Seton Hall University, Seton Hall Law School, and she has this incredible way of dealing with very difficult and contentious issues. With a demeanor that I have not seen on anyone else.
I was going to say, she when she introduced, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the guy who took Ed Hanneman's place.
Yes.
And she did it with such humor and grace.
Yes.
And she sort of let us know who he was,
mm-hmm.
And gave him the opening to maybe explain why.
And sympathizing with his predicament.
Right. He was in. She said he was put in the hot seat. And the thing was, she always spoke with such a huge smile on her face, which was really great.
She's amazing.
I was very, very impressed with her. So I can't wait to have her on. I know she's on tour right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe she's on a lecture circuit. Yes.
She's on a lecture circuit, and so when she comes back, we'll get her. I promise you, we'll bring her to you. You'll get the opportunity to hear her as well, because I was impressed with her. Tell me a little bit about the public advocate. This is something that you guys seem to have, and I'm not sure that any other state has it.
The way I understand it, the Office of Public Advocate existed about 10 or 12 years ago, but at some point it was disbanded. And Governor Corzine, who puts a great deal of emphasis on ethics and ethics reform, reinstituted that office, and actually it's now a department, it's a whole department. And the public advocate sounds extremely promising as far as a place to perhaps house some of the homeowner issues. They already have an office of dispute settlement under one of their divisions, and so we're hoping that perhaps that would be a good fit for the ADR.
And Ron Chen heads that. He's the public advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I liked him. I didn't talk to him personally, but he came up. He seems sort of laid back and smiling, and seems like a really easygoing type of person.
Easygoing, and I think that his priorities are, as they should be for a public advocate, I think his priorities are in the right place.
So maybe we'll try to get Ron Chen on one of these days as well.
Well,
you know, we'll make it in New Jersey. I'm kicking myself, and I've got to tell you, folks, I was up there for about 24 hours. I went up on Sunday afternoon, and I came back Monday night. But the conference was started, what, at 9 a.m. Monday morning, and went until,
It was supposed to until 1:15, but it went on until 2:45 or 3, I think.
Yeah, it went on because there was so much that people, you know,
yes.
So many people wanted to talk. But that 24 hours or 26 hours or however long I ended up being there was so packed. I had brought my recorder. I had intended to record. I'm thinking, I'll have time to record two or three shows while I'm up there and then get everyone together and talk. But there was so much going on. I have to congratulate you. I thought it was an exceptionally well-run, interesting conference, well-run, and very worthwhile.
Thank you, Shu. But a lot of people were involved in setting it up. We're delighted that it took place, and we wish that there will be a good follow-up on that conference, because it's important to take what we learned from that conference and to pursue it further.
What is the next step? For people who are listening out there thinking, maybe we ought to do something like that in our state, what can you give us in a nutshell, some ideas, lessons learned, what to look for, how to set something up?
Well, as in everything in this country, it always boils down to finances, but there are lots of variables that go into organizing a conference of this sort. One is the funding, and I would encourage people to look for foundations that are oriented towards civil rights or people's or homeowners' rights, and to see if they can get funding for a conference of this sort. And also to approach various universities who are known for their good works and for public service, and to see whether they can link up with them in order to put on a conference. And as you mentioned, with Representative Rubina, I think you mentioned.
Right.
I mean, there are a handful of legislators who are on the right side of issues, and they need to link up with them and get their support.
And you had two of the legislators, Senators Martin and Rice.
Yes.
And they both spoke. Unfortunately, they couldn't stick around.
Yes, we were competing with a legislative session in Trenton that day, so they had to go to their own legislative session that day.
So they had legitimate work to do. They didn't just duck out.
Oh no, that's absolutely. In fact, once we realized that there's a conflict that day, we weren't even sure if they would show up, but they did. Mostly because also, where we held the conference was not too far from the State House in Trenton, so that made it possible for them to quickly come over and then leave.
To duck out, but no, it was good to see them there, and it was good to see the diversity that
Yes.
you had, the different, the different groups of people who kind of came together. And
yeah, this affects all of us, Shu.
It does. It's a nonpartisan, everybody lives someplace.
Yes.
And except for the industry who predominantly, who advocate for them, but most of them don't seem to want to live in them themselves, which I think is quite telling. I asked them quite flat out, do you live in one? And, oh, no, not me. But they're very good for you. Me? You want me to live in one of those things after we got through mucking them about?
Well, no, our board president, in fact, spent $1 million of community funds so that the art attorneys argue that he has no rights in this community. I just find that quite bizarre.
But I mean, it's very true. So anyway, what were we saying before we got silly? Before I got silly?
I think we were talking about the various people at this conference.
I asked you, I said, are you going to do another one next year? Is this going to become something, an annual event?
I don't know, sure. You know, a lot of us have other full-time jobs, and it's very time-consuming to set something like this up. But what I'm hoping is that the results, you know, first of all, this conference, the proceedings of this conference are going to be published by the Rutgers Journal of Law and Public Policy. So we're hoping that we can take that and we can make strong recommendations to both the legislature and the governor's office about what the next steps ought to be, and to try and make people understand that they can no longer go on listening to the trade industry about what's good for homeowners, that they need to listen to homeowners about what's good for them.
Yeah, just ask the trade industry if they live in one, and that should give you your answer. You don't need to go too much further than that, right? Actually, I think I shamed one or two of them into moving into one. Which is kind of fun, but yeah, when I asked you in New Jersey, you said, are you going to make this an annual thing? I was going to put it on my calendar and come up, and you said, I hope not, because I hope we manage to get something done. And
yeah.
So this is where it's going to go with.
I hope so, Shu. I mean, I keep thinking, you know, it was 10 years ago that the New Jersey Assembly Task Force came up with their recommendations about what's needed to be done. 10 years later, we have the New Jersey Assembly that passes a trade industry bill instead of a homeowner's bill.
Right.
So it's a little discouraging when you think about your legislators, who are supposed to be the protectors of the citizens of a certain state, doing the exact opposite of what they're supposed to be doing. And in that respect, you know, my hope lies in the Supreme Court of New Jersey that if not the legislature, then the judicial system has to come to the rescue of homeowners.
Margaret, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Very quickly before we go, can you tell me when you expect the Supreme Court decision to come out?
I'm not 100% certain, but the indications are that before the end of June.
Before the end of June. Good luck, and I'll
thank
be in
you.
Touch. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shu.
Thanks for joining us on The Commons today. On The Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next time.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Where? Well,
your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.